Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show, monthly market update episode for the current month we are in of February 2017. I'm here now with our expert economist and wealth advisor, Paul Sloat, founder of Green Drake Advisors based in Wayne, Pennsylvania. Every month, Paul joins us here on the show and fills us in on the economic forces at work in the national and global economy and what those forces might do to the local real estate investment markets here in the U.S. where we operate in the short and long term. This month, being right on the heels of Donald Trump's inauguration, brings us some very interesting wild cards to look out for as real estate investors. I will let Paul explain that since he does tell it best. Welcome back to the show, Paul.
Thanks, Dan. And how are you today?
I have no complaints. It's clear skies here in Chicago. How about yourself?
Oh, it's a beautiful day here, a little bit chilly, but not quite like the snow yesterday.
Nice. For everybody's sake, we're here February 2017, and we're going to jump right into the monthly market updates. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you, Paul.
Well, thank you, Dan. And it's been just a few weeks into the Trump administration, and it's clearly going to be an interesting ride. As we know, the rule of thumb for all presidents is the president proposes and Congress disposes. So I think that while President Trump will have a certain impact on the economy, a lot of what he wants to do will need the help of Congress. So I think people are beginning to reassess that, and that may have a short-term impact on interest rates as they view his ability to get things done as being gated by Congress. So what we've seen recently is that 10-year interest rates, for example, have started to pull back from 2.6 to 2.4% so far. Just for reference, today is February 10th, so that's what they have done over the recent past. We think there is a little more pullback involved, but we do think overall U.S. growth is going to accelerate. Speaking of Congress, there are a number of things that need to get through Congress, such as the reform of the health care, the reform of taxes, and the reform of the whole approach to infrastructure. And we've seen floated for the first time potential reform of the entitlements, as we know here in the U.S. There is no way, if you run the numbers out, that the government can actually afford the entitlements the way they have been structured. So entitlement reform was inevitable someday. So let's talk about how this ultimately may have some impact on real estate. The first has to do with tax reform. We need to watch this carefully because part of tax reform is the potential limitation on the deductibility of interest expense. Should Congress push for the deductibility of interest expense to be limited, this could increase the actual cost of owning real estate. One of the big benefits is the tax benefit from being able to deduct interest expense. So this could have a negative impact on the value of real estate. So for all your listeners out there, they should watch this debate pretty carefully. So, and in addition, when we think about this, we also have to think about the border adjustment. So when we talk border adjustment, that means we're going to have no tariffs on goods going out of the country, but tariffs on goods coming into the country. This could affect the cost of building materials and could also affect the cost of construction equipment. For example, Japan depreciated the cost of the yen significantly over the past 3 years, and as a result, their cranes became super competitive against U.S. manufactured cranes. and they have gained significant market share. However, should the U.S. put in tariffs, that would dent their ability to undercut U.S. pricing. In addition, should the U.S. fix the problem of the dollar being overvalued, that would further dent their ability. So for all of those who are building buildings, one should pay careful attention to what goes on with the tax bill, not only for interest rates, but for the cost of actually building the building and everything that goes into it, whether it be an electric panel or the actual cable wiring. So that is my thought on Mr. Trump in Congress, and it's something for your listeners to keep in mind as we move forward. Now let's talk about some data. Employment growth continues to grow well, and that's been basically reflected in household formation over the last couple of years. If we average household formation for 2015 and 2016, it comes out to about 1.2 to 1.3 million, which, by the way, is the long-term average for the United States in the 90s and in the 2000s. So it looks to me like household formation is normalizing. If we have more households net being formed, then we need more housing units, and we are getting them. What we have seen is overall housing starts have risen up towards 1.2 million, and we expect ultimately for them to get up closer to 1.5 million, which is the long-term amount we need, because we destroy somewhere between 200,000 and 300,000 housing units per year. So right now, we're just not producing enough housing units for the number of new households that on net are being formed. So as a result, home prices continue to go up. We think that that's going to be limited by the ability of real incomes to go up, but they have continued to go up because you do not have a lot of housing units being built. We're about 200,000 to 300,000 units short. And what you can see is that the homeowner vacancy rate has headed back to exactly where it was throughout the 80s and the 90s, prior to the housing bubble in the early to mid-2000s. So that's one thing that we should think about. And the other thing I would point out, we have the millennials. They've come into the workforce as renters, which is what happens between the ages of 18 and 35. But the millennials are beginning to age into that home ownership demographic where people buy their first house, which is between 35 and 45. So we expect the home ownership rate, which is back to the lows seen in the 1960s and the lows seen in the late 80s, early 90s, to bottom somewhere around here and then to start heading up again. And we would not be surprised if it got back to 65% or so by the mid-2020s as these millennials move into their prime home buying years over the next decade. So that's another trend for your listeners to keep at their forefront, that we're going to have more houses needed and we're going to have more buyers of those houses. So that should be supportive for housing ownership. In addition, it appears that the goal of the government is shifting from low inflation to faster economic growth. Couple of things we should be aware of. If we have faster economic growth, it generally means faster rise in living standards, so more people would be able to buy houses. Number one. Number two, faster growth is usually associated with higher levels of inflation, so we're likely to have higher inflation. And number three, if we have higher inflation, we're likely to have higher interest rates. So we should keep all of those factors in mind as we move forward with a program that is focused on accelerating U.S. economic growth. And we are going to do that for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the country is going to be run for the average American compared to the large corporations. Large corporations don't vote. Average Americans do. It's why we ended up with Donald Trump as our president in a populist presidential election. And if we look at the statistics, 91% of Republicans are very happy with the actions Donald Trump has taken to date. So we expect this to do more. And if we were to look at real estate and the classes of real estate that would benefit from faster economic growth and also benefit from a Made in America thrust, we would think that that would also benefit your industrial sector, right? Your warehouse sector, and as well, it's likely to benefit your office sector over time. In addition, we have to remember that with more companies here, we're going to have and more production here. We'll have more need for data centers because the cloud continues to grow as the most efficient way to manage your data. So for corporations, once they get to be mid-sized to large-sized, cloud is the dominant form. And even for small-sized businesses, they've gone to cloud as opposed to having their own server as being the most efficient, lowest-cost way. So we would expect data centers to grow as well at a reasonably prodigious rate. The only monkey wrench we see in this now is we've had rising interest rates, which will probably put a bottom in cap rates. We expect cap rates to drift up over time as interest rates drift up. In addition, cap rates will likely drift upwards as we have more problems in certain classes of real estate where we are overbuilding. So I would expect that. And by the way, the banks have finally realized that we might have oversupply in some classes of real estate because their commercial real estate lending growth has slowed. It's still growing at a pretty reasonable rate of 8.7% year over year. However, it has slowed from over 10% last year. We expect this to continue to slow because the Federal Reserve Senior Loan Officer Survey indicates that commercial banks are tightening their policies on commercial real estate lending. So as a result, it will be harder to get a hold of a loan for a piece of real estate. And oh, by the way, this is reflected in the percent of real estate that turned over in the commercial area last year, which was down. And the amount of dollars that were actually transacted in commercial real estate, which was down as well. So we would watch this trend carefully. We would expect slowing growth in commercial real estate loans for the remainder of this economic recovery. And we've also seen in the opposite, if we look at residential real estate mortgages have continued to accelerate year over year. We're now running on average in somewhere between 5.5% and 6%, up from 4% or so a year ago and up from 2% or so 3 years ago. So it looks like mortgage growth is beginning to fulfill its function in the economy. The ability to grow mortgage loans is limited by two things. Number one, the amount of homes out there and available, which is back to historical lows as a percent of all homes, and it's limited by people's medium income growth. Because income needs to grow in order for us to afford more house. and in order for us to take a larger mortgage loan. So therefore, we're probably at the point where we're going to see mortgage loan growth probably level out until labor income growth accelerates from here, which probably will not occur until the next recovery, probably post-2019, something in the 2020 to 2024 time horizon. So we would look for that to accelerate after the next recession. In addition, if you're thinking about buildings and cap rates, if interest rates are going up and cap rates go up, that means the multiple of cash flow you get for your building is going to go down. And so we would expect that cap rates would continue upward and multiples would be under pressure more or less for the next 5 years as inflation rises up. We think they've reached a low, a long-term low, in fact, and that the cap rates have only one direction to go unless we have a depression, in which case we'll see significant defaults on buildings because people cannot afford to pay the interest to the banks. So those are a few thoughts I am thinking about here. Dan, it's a short one, but kind of to the point of some things that people should be aware of in their real estate investing. Have any questions on today's material?
I do. I made a couple notes here, Paul. One thing that I wanted to ask you to kind of clarify, you said something about the vacancy rate in the 80s and 90s. Would you mind repeating that and kind of explaining what that is so that anybody listening would just have the context of what that vacancy rate is actually measuring?
Right. So we're referring to the homeowner vacancy rate that's published by the Census Bureau. You can go online and look it up. It's an official vacancy rate, and it says how many houses are vacant. And it was estimated at 1.8% in Q4 2016. I would note that the low at the bottom of the last housing downturn was back in 1994, and that was about 1.4%. The homeowner vacancy rate actually peaked around 2.9% back in 2009 when we had a significant number of vacant properties. But today, that vacancy number is way down, and we would expect that it will fall further as demand for homes continues to rise, but the number of housing units we're building is still below where we need to build them. And in fact, if you go back to the 80s and 90s, that housing vacancy rate generally fluctuated between 1.6 and 1.9%. So we are now within that range. Is that helpful, Dan?
It is very enlightening that you mentioned those numbers. I've never taken a look at them myself, but I do, as many of us in the business long enough, remember the 2009 and 2.9% in the context of what it was for all those others really does highlight the amount of vacant properties that we had on the market. And another thing, in our community, the real estate investor community, there's this talk of shadow inventory, and there's this talk of banks holding back vacant properties, and there's this talk of like this large influx of supply that could potentially like hit the market come spring and sort of like screw up the prices a little bit if it does. But if I'm basing my observation on this vacancy rate that you just described, there is not a ton of shadow inventory somewhere sitting on banks' books according to the vacancy, unless these are occupied properties the banks have on their books. Whereas, you know,
I would agree with that, Dan, because when we look at this vacancy rate, it takes into account all the homes that are held by the banks that are not on the market. So I don't think there's a normal friction, right, an inventory that's out there. And I think we've normalized it.
And the last thing I wanted to have you just touch on would be a little bit of an explanation and context, very similar to what we did with the vacancy rate, for the residential mortgage growth accelerating to 5 to 6%. Would you mind kind of enlightening me on that, Paul?
Right. So we think it's not going to accelerate from here till after the next recession, which we're expecting sometime in either late 2018 or 2019, dependent on how the Federal Reserve acts. But what we are thinking is the following. We're going to have faster economic growth in the next recovery, partly driven by the millennials moving into their prime home buying years and filling up their houses with things that are needed, partly driven by electric vehicles and the explosion of the electric vehicle market, partly driven by autonomous vehicles and explosion in autonomous vehicles, partly driven by manufacturing coming back to the U.S., which won't directly employ a lot of people, but will indirectly employ a lot of people. And so we see a more balanced and faster economic growth ahead for the economy. And if we have faster economic growth, that means that wages can grow faster, and it means that the rate at which housing prices rise can accelerate a little bit. And it also means that we can remain within our home price to income ratios without violating the rules, but allow mortgages to go up at a faster rate because incomes are going up at a faster rate. Is that helpful?
So when you say mortgages are going up, are we talking about the interest rate that borrowers are paying?
I'm not even talking about the interest rate. I'm talking about the actual dollar amount of mortgages.
Got it. Okay. Understood.
So when I say here, because when we look at overall credit in the economy, it really breaks down into mortgages and commercial, right, borrowing. And then we have some credit card borrowing, but the real principal drivers are mortgage for an individual to own a home and commercial credit among a variety of commercial categories, whether it be C&I, commercial real estate, et cetera.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, Paul, did you want to share your company information? If anybody wants to get in touch with you, how can they find out more about you?
So for those of your listeners who wish to get in touch with me, I can be reached at our offices here in Wayne, Pennsylvania at 610-687-7766, or you can go to our website and fill out our contact us form. Our website is at www.greendrakeadvisors.com. And I will tell you that some of you out there have contacted us this way, and we have followed up with you.
Paul, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day here preparing our topic. And thank you for listening to this monthly market update episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving an email notification when the next REI Diamond Show episode is released? You can either sign up at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcast apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Are you interested in either buying a deal from me or presenting one of your deals or listings for me to buy from you? You can go to www.reidiamonds.com and click the link at the top of the page. I am currently looking for deals/doing deals in the Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware, and Maryland region, as well as the Chicago, Illinois region, Atlanta, Georgia region, and the Tampa Bay region in Florida. Finally, if you have certain questions or topics you'd like to see discussed on a future episode, or if you have a guest suggestion or would like to become a guest yourself on the show, you can also do that by either clicking the link at the top to contact Dan or the become a guest link at the top of the page at www.reidiamonds.com. we have had a variety of what I consider to be surprise, fantastic guests with great reviewed episodes that have come on the show. We've got 80 plus episodes now, and we've had quite a few surprise guests that I had no idea existed prior to their checking me out and applying online. So I do encourage you, if you feel like you have something we could add to the show, to check us out there, and maybe we'll have you on one of the future episodes. Thank you again for being a loyal listener of the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here. I'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.